first question is always the hardest. First lesson is 0 to 1, takes longer than 1 to 100. So I will tell you, you'll see people can start crowding around, and then invariably I'm like, who has the next question? And then the minute I have to go somewhere, people are like, oh, wait, can I ask you? And want to walk with me. So anyway, anybody have a question? Yes.
So David, you and I, we've known each other, what, 4 years?
Yep.
4 or 5 years. So I heard you mention earlier you hit rock bottom, you know, earlier on in your career. Very similar to me hitting rock bottom with my overall cancer journey. Could you explain what were some of the tools or steps that you took from a mental preservation standpoint,
yeah,
to rebuild and reclaim your life?
I think the first step was faith. Because when you hit rock bottom, that's all you have. That's all you have is a hope or a prayer or a confidence that you're protected, promoted, loved, and perfected. And whether you read things like Man's Search for Meaning with Viktor Frankl, who was in a basement that I couldn't even imagine during the Holocaust, or David Goggins and the basements that he's been in, all of these individuals, they call it what they want to call it, but it's just simple faith. If you can give meaning to your past that does not cast a shadow on your future, if you can give meaning to the mistakes, the setbacks, the failures, the defining moments, the historical relevances of your past that does not cast a shadow on your future, then you're going to be aligned with the divine. So when you're aligned with the divine, when you're aligned with God, you're protected, promoted, loved, and perfected. You have access to the infinite information, intelligence, intuition, and inspiration. You are applying your why to the activities that you desire to have during your human experience, and you learn faster. I mentioned something in the Diamond Lunch about zero has no exponential outcome. And so many people live in a zero-sum game, and they wonder why they always end up at zero, because zero to the 10th power is still zero. And they're looking for aggregation, acceleration, and a compounding impact when they're running some sort of zero-sum game, whether it's from income, whether it's from giving, whether it's from their health. They're running a zero-sum game, not because they lack wisdom. They lack faith. Everything changes when you live your life with no evidence or evidence being contrary to where you want to be, and faith that you're being protected and promoted, loved and perfected, when you don't understand that. And so anybody's out there, basement, or you feel you're close to your basement, or you just feel low, yes, wisdom will help you. So you need to ask for the wisdom. And there's so many different platforms today that allow us to gather wisdom. So many places, unlike in the past, even 4 years ago. But more importantly, there's only one place you can access faith: your God. And if you don't believe in something bigger than you, that's omniscient, all-powerful, all-knowing, that loves you, protects you, promotes you, then you will never reach your potential. You'll never see your higher self. You'll never feel the way that you're meant to feel in this human experience. And so for me, it was quite simple. And that's why I talk about 2 years before I lost everything, my mom questioned my faith and asked me, when I told her I didn't believe in God, and she said, oh yeah, you do. You believe in the wrong God. And when I started taking stock in myself, in my God, and I love to simplify things. I have a philosophy that if you can't teach it, you don't know it. And if you can't teach it in a simple way, you don't know it. Because God loves simple. The universe loves simple. It's not complex. It couldn't work the way it works, the universe, if it wasn't simple. It all just fit. And you have to be humble enough to say, I don't know what I don't know. I have no idea how losing everything and, you know, my wife telling me she's leaving me, or losing my mom's house, or losing a job or a deal, or getting cancer, how that could be protecting, promoting, love, and perfecting me. It won't if all you seek is wisdom, logic, analysis. It won't protect you, promote you. Because there's logic, wisdom, and analysis won't protect you, promote you, love you, or perfect you. But the combination of wisdom and faith will.
think that without that lack of faith, you're probably in the
zero-sum game. Zero-sum game. It's a zero-sum game. Think about giving itself. You know, I talk about giving as a zero-sum game. If you give more than you receive, you're going to end up at zero. Because that's why the Bibles, and you'll always hear me talk about Bibles, all the Bibles say one thing. The more you give, the more you will be given. And then you receive what you're given, and then you ask for more. You ask for what you seek, because it's the infinite. In fact, if you have faith, you have no problem receiving and no problem asking for more, because if you have faith, there's more than enough of everything for everyone, and omniscient, all-powerful, more than enough. Why wouldn't you just ask for more? If we were going to dinner, and I had my own table by myself, and I had 100 steaks on my table, none of you would feel bad about coming up if you were hungry and saying, hey, Dave, would you mind giving me a steak? But if I had this much on my plate and I was starving and I was at the table, all of you would feel bad asking for it even if you were starving. Why? Because you don't believe there's more than enough on my plate. So is your God one that has thousands of steaks every night for you? Then why would you feel bad or guilty or resentful or not worthy of asking for one? And remember, that person loves you, protects you, promotes you, that entity, whatever you think, more than your mom. So your mom would give you the steak before she ate it.
I might give you some cholesterol medicine.
Yeah. Yeah. We could do organic vegetables. Yes. Although, I love the red meat example, because I'm old enough now that I think red meat has been healthy, unhealthy, healthy, unhealthy, and now they're saying it's healthy again. So it's hard to understand.
Go figure.
Eggs too, right? Yeah, exactly. I think they're just driving market forces on CPG products, right? It's like the plant-based everything, and then they're like, you know, the Burger King Impossible Burger, and all of a sudden it's like, that may be actually less healthy than a real hamburger. With all the process,
where everything's bad for you, and you're left with like, there's nothing.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
When I went to the food, I spoke at the food conference East by.
You're talking South Expo West.
Expo West, right? There was a whole trend one year. Everything was plant-based, and so I was walking around going, "Has anybody seen the chicken-based chicken activation? Because I'm really interested in the chicken-based chicken, not the. I go, aren't we going to run out of plants? Because everything's made of plants now. I'm going to invest in cows. All right, next, very good. Next question.
Thanks, David.
This is a recording device, not an amplification. So,
what would you say to somebody that is young and misguided? And I guess I'll give some.
Those are like a common thing. Young and misguided. Yeah, nothing stupid. I'm going on record by saying there's nothing stupider than a teenager. Even if they graduate summa cum laude from their college.
So someone that's misguided, someone that's young, maybe has a general idea of religion and God.
Yeah, yeah.
Hasn't really hit rock bottom.
Yeah.
And at the same time gets the wrong type of support to enable.
Yeah, remember, wrong voices, we make wrong choices. So for me, I know you can't change, especially a young person. You can't change them. What you resist persists, you can't. They are hard to teach because they're hard to reach. So kids, they catch lessons. They catch them by watching. And so number one, all the kids around you, you act the way you want them to act. Let them see you wake up at 4 o'clock every day, right? Let them see you pray. Let them see you go to church. Don't ask them or make them come, and your own fulfillment will guide them instead of so many of us try to tell them or teach them. I my kids catch the lessons all around me, and I tell my kids three things and young people three things. One, do your best. That's all I say. I don't give a shit. You got to be in Spanish? Did you do your best? That's all I want to know. Two, what lessons did you learn? What, you're here, do your best, learn lessons, and were you able to make it fun?
Make it what?
Fun. The successful people in life, the best lesson I learned in sports was to learn to love what I don't like or love. And I said it on the bigger stage in there. If someone would say, what makes you so successful that you could make over $100 million, lose it, and make it back again? Because I literally learned to love shit that other people don't like or love, and I don't like or love. And I learned to love it. I changed the way I looked at it. I understand the meaning of it. I stopped saying, I'll be happy when I make $100 million back. It was, I'm going to make over $100 million again for the sake of teaching other people to do it. For the sake of building community centers in Africa. For the sake of my generational wealth.
Tied to purpose.
Always. It's a, you know, being the chairman of Napoleon Hill Institute, if you haven't read or listened to Outwitting the Devil, to me, I think it's a more relevant and powerful book than even Think and Grow Rich. Because it talks about definiteness of purpose. Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill, 1937, written, more relevant today than most books released, including my own. I wish the depth and the layers of understanding and awareness of Outwitting the Devil will change your life. Just understanding in bad times why successful people are more successful, why that gap is increasing, not just because the exponential value of zero is zero, right? Because things aggregate, accelerate, and compound. So if you have generational wealth, it's going to accelerate, aggregate, and compound. You're going to create a bigger gap. But drifters, 98% of all human beings drift. They have no definiteness of purpose. They don't have for the sake of what. They're not applying their why. They're searching for their why, which then again reconciles faith, because you can't apply your why unless you have faith that you are the thoughts about your purpose and that you're protected and promoted.
So how could you help guide that misdirected person to finding that?
Questions and suggestions. Do never tell anybody what to do. I let people shout at me all the time, and they say, well, what can I do for you? I said, you need to ask me questions and give me suggestions. Part of my success in my business is because I've had some 17-year-old shadow me during the day, asking me questions in a whole different perspective because he has a future perspective. And then he says, hey, man, have you ever heard of this app? I was like, what app? Dude, you pay that guy right there to do this, and you spend all this time doing this. You know there's an app that, yeah, like I'll use one of the apps I never heard of was just Turo. Somebody's shadowing me. I'm like dicking around with Uber, with rent-a-cars, with drivers and chauffeurs. And he's like, have you ever heard of Turo? This would be a perfect, you know, you could Turo a Cadillac Escalade for the masters instead of paying $2,500 a day, have one of your interns drive you around in a $97 a day 2016 Cadillac Escalade with 100,000 miles in it, and nobody will know the difference. Right? When you got four of those, you know, instead of $10,000 a day at the masters, I'm spending $100, you know. But these are questions and suggestions. My kids are always, I never tell them what to do. I just ask questions. Would it help you if? Do you know anyone that could help you with that? Would it help you if? Do you know anyone that could help you with that? What are you doing today? Like, my son's 15. What are you doing today? He's like, Dad, I sucked at putting. He's a really good golfer. He's like, well, you know, I said, oh. I said, well, what are you doing to fix that? Would it help you if I introduce you to Virgil Herring, the number one PGA coach, who literally is an expert at putting? Would it help you if I introduce you to him? Not, you need to practice more putting. You need to talk to my friend. You don't need to do anything. Just, would it help you if? And if not, it's cool. You know, even with drugs and things like that, I've always, with my kids, I've given them the choice. So it's been my experience that anyone that I've known that has tried heroin either ends up dead or in deep shit. I've never met one person that told me, man, you know, I tried heroin and shit's going well for me. Not one person. That stopped me from using it. So if you want to take that chance, then use it. It's the same thing with fentanyl. But I don't think there's lazy kids. I think there's lazy parents. I think there's lazy parents. You're born into a majesty. You have unbelievable potential. But as parents, we need to guide people towards their potential of what they want. Not what we want for them, what they want.
And
that Napoleon Hill book when he's going to Philadelphia and he's getting the downloads and he's like, you know, $40 trusting it. I've had similar downloads to just trust and take the next step. How do you keep that faith or just trust that what you're being told from the quantum or the,
yeah,
the higher being?
So how do you use your intuition? How do you get a calling? How do you have faith? So let me help you out with intuition, because intuition is interesting to me, and you may or may not agree with me, but I believe it to be true. Intuition does not work in man-made constructive time. So my favorite example, I don't care, you've heard this example, but I love it because I lived it. I'm at the craps table. Anyone know what craps, the dice game? So I'm at the craps table, and God comes to me all the time, heart eight. I swear. It's the same thing as other business things. But God, for some reason, comes to me at the craps table all the time. Heart eight. So I immediately think that the next roll is going to be a heart eight. God, or your God and my God, we don't know man-made linear time, man-constructive time. All God is saying is, hey, son, I need you to elevate your awareness to the heart eight.
What was that last part?
I need you to elevate your awareness to the heart eight. I have a lesson to teach you, or I have some... But I'm telling you, elevate your awareness to the heart eight. Pay attention and give intention to it. That's all he's saying. But he doesn't say now. He's just saying elevate the awareness and you will learn more, learn faster. And intuition to me, it has no time. And so I don't take a linear decision and put it within the Constitution. But what I do is I trust it and then I start vetting what I'm supposed to learn from it. This idea of trusting and vetting saves so much time. People don't like to vet because you have to be more interested than interesting. You have to make people, including yourself, feel uncomfortable when you vet things because you ask them out of trust. You know, and I tell people all the time, it's not that I don't trust you that I'm asking you this question, right? It's I do trust you. I want to make sure we're communicating effectively because I may not have heard you correctly. You may not have communicated it effectively, so I'm going to double check what I think I'm hearing. So if you tell me Carrie's your client and she makes $1 million off of you, can I talk to Carrie? Isn't not trusting you. It's trusting you. I want to make sure I heard you correctly. And so I'm not going to be uncomfortable and say, hey, what I heard you say is that Carrie's a client of yours and she made $1 million, right? I heard my boy Proctor over here say, Dave saved my life 4 years ago. I want to make sure what that means to other people. He actually said that, but I'm not a doctor. He had cancer. So if you don't vet that, then you won't know the value that I bring in a certain situation. So I live by trusting and vetting all the time. Out of trust, I'm vetting you. I have no problem when my mom used to say things to ask her questions about it because I trusted her so much. I knew she wouldn't be offended if I said, explain that to me. You know, and when you're an investor like me, I've learned I ask really uncomfortable questions because I trust you. And I give you an opportunity to explain more, to re-engineer my vision, all the different things. Because I could tell you, my friend came up to me and was like, Dave, do you remember me? You saved my life 4 years ago. I'm not a doctor. Right. I forgot he even had cancer. Right. I'm not even sure what he meant by it. I'm complimented. But it doesn't stop me from not being a liar and telling you, oh, well, I save people's lives, man. Mm. You should coach with Dave Meltzer. He's a savior. Mm. Talk to my man.
Yeah.
Well, meanwhile, it has nothing to do with what you need.
Right.
Trust in vet, ask uncomfortable questions to your children, to everyone. Ask them questions, give them suggestions. It's okay, it's fine. You'll allow the people that are lying, cheating, manipulating, overselling, and back-end selling, they'll fall away very quickly. You won't have to fire them. I'm accountable. Any situation that I've lost money is because I didn't trust and vet it. But what most people do, I'll take this question next. Here's a scenario that all of us have had. You're in a deal and you want it to happen so much and you don't ask the hard questions. You And you go along and you continually like, well, you know, you're justifying during the deal why you're not asking that. I should really check that out. Or, you know, does 300% gross improvement mean from $3 or $3 million? Like, I should really ask. No, I don't want to offend them because I want the deal to go through. Then what happens is the deal goes through and then you find out that you were oversold, back end sold, lied, manipulated, or cheated, and then you blame him. Come on, blame yourself. You knew.
That's right.
I knew every time someone fucked me over, I knew I was getting fucked over, but I wanted to hope and pray that I wasn't getting fucked over, or that I could outwit the fact that I was getting fucked over.
Stay too long.
Right? I thought I was better than that I was outwitting the devil.
Right. Mm.
I wasn't outwitting the devil. That's right. I'm humble. My job is to trust and vet you and determine through hard questions. The same about when you portray value. Perceived value and bottom line is the only thing you need to know in selling.
Yeah.
Perceived value is based off of one thing. Your comfort level and confidence in articulating that value to exceed what you're asking for. That's it.
Yes, sir.
It's people ask me all the time, how much for your beach house? What are you selling? Well, whatever, like, how much is it worth? I'm like, whatever someone's going to pay for
right.
it. But I'll tell you what I'm comfortable and confident telling you it's worth, but I also know my bottom line. I also know my bottom, which is just math. And the math says, this is what I'm willing to sell it for, or this is what I'm willing to do it for. And if you're below my bottom line, I don't renegotiate, I walk away. I use a 3-no rule. This isn't the right time. When you're ready to pay me that, let me know. 3-no rule to me is one of the most powerful things in my life of trust is, you know, if I'm pursuing you and you, I've always created a go, no go plan. And you tell me to call you Friday. This drives me crazy with all my clients. He tells me to call him Friday at 9 a.m. I call him Friday at 9 a.m. He says, sorry, Dave, I'm busy. One no. So I said, should I call you back at 5 o'clock? Now, if he didn't answer, that's one no too. Hey, man, you told me to call you at 9 o'clock a.m. It's 9 o'clock a.m. Call me back. I'll call him again before 5 o'clock the same day. I'm not going to sit into that whole, when should I call him back? He's going to think I actually want to get the deal done. But how many of you sit there? Oh, I don't want to offend him. No, call him. Then if he doesn't answer, that's two no's at 5 o'clock. Then I say, I'll call you tomorrow. Again, on the third no every time, I always say, this obviously isn't the right time. When it is, let me know. Because two things happen in that case, and both are really beneficial for you. One, it accelerates them to make you a priority because they feel bad. They haven't, because they want to get the deal done. Or two, you've given permission for them to say no. You've given them permission that time, value, and emotion has changed. Because a lot of times we say things out of emotion. Oh, yeah, man, sounds great.
Right.
And they don't know all your hopes and dreams are lying at us. So when you're an investor and you're like, man, your business sounds great, they think you want to invest.
Mm-hmm.
Without seeing a deck, without... And so now you've given me permission on the third one to say, look, it sounds great, but it's not a priority at this time for me. I only have so many sources and resources. I will let you know when.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm very good at not stringing people along anymore, but I used to hurt so many people by being nice.
Mm-hmm.
By not telling them time, emotion, and value has changed, or I didn't really mean what you heard.
Yeah.
It's not what I say, it's what you hear. So let me clarify that and see, would it help you if I did this instead?
Mm-hmm.
Or I know someone that may be able to help you.
Yeah.
Right? Two things I'm always trying to get through. Do you know someone that can help me, or would it help you if?
Mm-hmm.
That's all I want to find out. Because value is derived only in three ways. Only way you can provide value to people, give them more of what's working, more of what they like, or more of what they know. In the converse, true, right? Give them, take away what's not working, what they don't like, or what they don't know. You can't give me any scenario that's not how value is derived. So many people try to confuse it. So just when you're looking at providing value to people, you got to ask them, hey man, what's working? What do you like? And what do you know? What's not working? What don't you like? And what you don't know? And you'll provide shitloads of value.
Mm.
All right, go ahead.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Yes. David, thank you for this time too. Quick question, man. I was concerned on the pivot. You know, I'm an entrepreneur, 8 years in. My wife and I working for ourselves. We run a security guard company.
Nice.
In San Antonio. And from Gary, Indiana, man, from nothing. So for all intents and purposes, I'm a superstar.
Yeah, right. I'm from Akron, so I get it. That's good.
It's not. It's your small fish.
Yeah, right? Yeah, I get it.
Listening to Andrew in there, I almost cried because
was that your wife next to you too?
My wife
yeah,
next
yeah.
To me.
Huh?
Because in reality, man, we have not made it.
Mm.
We have not really made the money, the infrastructure, how we have it set up. It's, I feel like I'm hanging on by a thread.
Yeah.
You know, and listening to them, it's a humility check.
Mm-hmm.
I have to pivot, baby, and I have to do something different.
Yeah. So, let me help you.
Sure.
There is no pivots.
Okay.
There's only expansion of skills, knowledge, and desire. Only expansion. Mm-hmm. The universe expands. Everything expands. You don't pivot.
Okay.
Right? When COVID hit, I didn't pivot. I took inventory of my skills, my knowledge, and my desires, and then I applied it to what was doing well, what was stable, and what I thought would be doing well. Then I found the teams that I wanted to play on in the position I wanted to play on those teams where I could ask for help from some of my team members and give help to other people on my team. Sorry to use sports analogy, but that's where I come from. And so when I sit and listen to Andrew every time, and I'm someone who's made over $100 million twice in my life, I come from Akron, Ohio, single mom, six kids, two-bedroom apartment, and I think to myself, man, I haven't made it. Look at these guys. I'm just hanging on by a thread. Not really anymore, because I know I'm constantly saying, okay, let's look at the skills, knowledge, and desire that it took to get to where you are today from where you were.
Yes, sir.
Let's give meaning to the mistakes, setbacks, failures, defining moments, historical relevances, and let's go play for those teams. That's why I get on the stage with Andrew, because I like to level set people and say, look, man, this isn't about billionaires. This is about you guys, because he'll help you. Set it up so you're not paying him a shitload, $250,000 for a meeting, because you need to restructure when he could just set you up to go ahead and go from 2.6 to 5.2 to 10.4 to 20.8 to 41.6 to 81.2 to 160 million. That's how it works. It's just a matter of time. Remember, I got you, Nick. I'll finish. Sorry. Yeah. So every problem has the solution already there. This is the infinite. This is why I have faith. So every time God challenges me, the answer is in there. In the man-made construct, not God's time, not infinite time, but in human time, which is 24 hours a day guaranteed every single day to all of us, except if it's the last day of your life, you'll be cheated. Every other day it's guaranteed. It's only certainty of tomorrow. I promise you have 24 hours. So every problem God confronts, every challenge that he gives me, the problem's in it already. So then, therefore, because giving and receiving are one, problems and solutions, that's why they call it resolution. A resolution, a revelation, these are all, so watch this. If every problem is within, the solution is in the problem, then therefore it's just a lapse of time between the problem and the resolution or the solution.
Yeah.
So what we want to do is shorten the distance of that resistance. We want to just shorten time. And so in my love language of time, the fastest way to shorten the distance to find the solution in the problem is to find someone who's already there. That's the fastest way. You're from here?
I am.
If you put me outside with no GPS and said, Dave, drive to the airport, how long do you think it would take me? How many times have you been to the airport? If you had no GPS and I was with you, how long would it take me? So you just have to do a timing and risk tolerance analysis of what it's going to, what you have to invest in order to shorten the distance. Sometimes it's worth it, sometimes it's not.